So it is my personal finding that a lot of role players are very, 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 very bad at character and roleplay. I say this knowing that there's always a lot of objections to this, but it's something that I feel like people who are really good with character and narrative and stuff like that, they tend to agree with. It's hard to explain. It's almost like some kind of Jedi nonsense, like, I can feel it in you. You're either good with character or you're clearly not. And you can learn, like, everyone has a little bit of character in you, but not everyone just naturally has an aptitude for it. And as we've been discussing, there's also a lot of, like, real social psychology going into forming a role-playing group. Like, these are real people, a small group of which, and you are trying to get them to do an objective. So all the typical things, like, you know, the stuff that make it hard to get a group together and coordinate, those still apply to a role-playing game, even though it's a game. Like, the natural human stuff just happens, and you get these different perspectives. Like, for example, I once played a game where I was the plucky but reluctant idiot hero. You know, I was like, why are we going in this dungeon? It's scary. And then the other player was just a metagamer, and they were an orc who was worshipping Azathoth. And in that group, I got accused of being subversive because I was asking, why would we go in the dungeons? You know, the perspectives are strange and alien sometimes when you really slow down and think about, like, where are people coming from with some of these ideas? And here's the thing, if you're one of the people who really cares and you're asking, like, why do people do this? How do we motivate them to do other things? Odds are pretty good that you're probably one of the people who's on track to playing a good character, or you're already good at playing good characters. I mean, that's the mentality that you need. But what if you have a group where nobody is asking that and nobody is interacting with the setting or anything else like that? What do you do if you want a game that has more narrative elements? That is a really big, difficult question. I see this sometimes, and it is so hard to answer because part of it depends on what's going on with your group. And I often see really dumb advice on the internet. One of the most common things I see is, well, have you tried talking to your players? Which is super stupid, because it's like asking, well, have you tried turning your system off and on again? It's like the first step. You know, I feel like most people talk to their players. You're with those guys for 4 to 8 hours. And yes, some people are socially averse and they don't communicate, but typically, if you're spending a lot of time, if you're spending that much time in a room with people, you are communicating. So let's set that aside and assume that you have done the bare minimum. You have done the basic. You are talking to people. In fact, I'm also going to say if someone recommends that you should talk to your players, disregard them, because if you're not talking to your players, it's because there's some psychology in you that prevents you from doing that, and talking is probably really difficult for you. And otherwise, you've already done it. So that person has no perspective. They're wasting your time. It's a really safe suggestion that does nothing. It's meaningless. It means nothing. So instead of safe, like, bullcrap, let's think about why would you be in this situation? And there's a couple of different reasons. For my group, I would talk to my guys and I would say, don't you want to play a more player-driven game? Like, wouldn't you like to be in charge? Wouldn't you like to see your decisions shaping the world? And the end is tailored to what you did and not what I told you to do. And they would say, yeah, that sounds like a great game. They would act enthusiastic, they would tell me they wanted it, and we would start the game. I would make sure that their characters all, like, worked and were what we needed to play, and they would do nothing. They would wait, and they would try to make the most optimal decisions, and if that optimal decision wasn't a dungeon, they did not know what to do. And I'd talk to them. I'd say, why, guys? Why aren't you doing anything? And they'd say, well, it's your fault, Greg. You're the GM. You should be making all of your expectations clear. You need to fix this. And here was the catch, they really had no proactive ideas of their own to make it work because they were similar people out of game as they were in the game. They were not making choices, they weren't, like, committed to anything, it was just like, I don't know, Greg, you have to fix it. So it fell on me, and if I wanted a change, I had to lead it somehow, that's what they were telling me. And why? And when you think about it, some of you who are DMs all the time, those forever DMs out there, why are you always stuck as the DM? Like, how is it that everybody else just passively says, like, well, I don't have any ideas for a game, I don't want to run things, I don't want all the trouble and the challenge and everything. You do it. You be the GM. You know what it is? Most groups kind of have somebody who emerges as a leader of the group. They're the ones who, if you're lucky enough to have one anyway, will decide what to put on the pizza when you order pizza for the group, or whatever. And then you call the pizza place and you tell them to deliver the pizza, and, you know, you're the guy who takes initiative. A lot of groups have just one of those guys, because if you have more than one, then you get more fighting. It can be detrimental at times, but not always. And then that guy who orders the pizzas, that's also the GM. Because you're the one who takes initiative, you're the one who leads things. You might be the one who suggested we play role-playing games in the first place. I was the one saying, hey guys, let's have more player-led games. And then ironically, I was the GM and not a player. Then the players would say, why are you not leading us better? Right? So this is the crux that I think some of you are in. It's not everybody, but it is a type of psychological predicament that's related to group psychology that traps you in this situation of, like, you've got a lot of ideas, you've got a lot of initiative, you want to see a really narrative game. But as soon as you take yourself out of the group and become kind of like the referee or this impartial judge, the group doesn't have their team leader anymore. They're just the guys that are letting you run the game. Now, I come to this perspective because I actually learned to play in a really good narrative group. And me and my friend both had pretty good, like, leadership takes on things, but we were okay sitting down and not being the leader all the time. So sometimes I would GM, and my friend would be the group leader, and everybody was happy. Or sometimes he would GM, and I would be the group leader, and everybody was happy. And if on the occasion that someone else GM'd, he and I would team up, and we would do these fun buddy duo things, and we would have these bits that we would play. And that was also a lot of fun, and we would lead the team. So the games were always moving in a direction. It was very easy to GM. Like, I feel like we had games that didn't play as well, like the story would fall apart or stupid things would happen. But we never had the issue of, like, well, the party doesn't know what they want to do. We always had somebody leading, somebody saying, hey, let's go over there. Jim, you do that. Mike, you do this. Let's go. So player-led games were the default. And in our group, the DMPC is a four-letter word. We did not speak it. We do not need the DMPC. They serve no functional purpose, and they should get out of here! Go be somewhere else! Non-existent, preferably. That was the group that I learned to play with, but most groups look down on DMPCs because they tend to be used really poorly. It's a character the GM wants to play, and then the GM makes them more powerful than the party, or they replace certain aspects of the party, or so on. Like, the GM wants them to be important, and then puts too much emphasis on them because the GM is God, and they invest the godlike power into their self. That, or sometimes the DMPCs are just useless, like they'll be joke characters that tag along and don't really do anything. But I thought back to my friend's dad was an old school role player, and I remember him running a game, and he tried to get us in on it because he wanted us to lead the group. We failed. Utterly and completely, because this game had too many meta role players in it, they didn't understand motive, and they didn't like us trying to have motive. It distracted from their greatness, you know? Like, look, they wanted to go into a dungeon and kill the monster and feel powerful. And here we were trying to, like, talk to people and figure out why were we in the dungeon at all. We were subversive to that group. But I was told about the dynamic that the GM had that he was trying to change, and what he was sick of was having this DMPC show up over and over again. He had this guy, let's call him Wallace, and Wallace was just a wizard. At the start of the game, all the party was introduced, they were all together, and the GM said, okay, what do you want to do now? And the party said, I don't know. What do the NPCs want us to do? So the GM conjured up Wallace, and Wallace suggested, well, why don't we go over here and do this adventure? And so the party did whatever Wallace told them to do. And for, like, I don't even know how long he'd been running this game, that was how everything always went. Wallace would direct them to some kind of adventure, and then the GM would try to have Wallace leave, and the party would fall apart as soon as Wallace was gone. He'd say, what do you want to do now? And the party would say, well, where's Wallace? And he'd say, well, Wallace left to go do something important and wizardly. And they would say, well, I'm going to go find Wallace then. We go wherever Wallace is. And they would travel the world to find Wallace and ask Wallace what he thought they should do next. And Wallace, always surprised, would say, I don't know, guys, and he would give them another adventure. Half the game was, where is Wallace? Where did Wallace go to now? We have to find Wallace. We can't adventure without Wallace. And it was driving him crazy because he wanted to do political intrigue and spies and like, story. And his players, you can't do that. You can't introduce a spy to a party that will just do whatever the NPCs tell them. You'd be like, okay, so here's this guy who wants to join the party. And they'd say, what do you think, Wallace? And at that point, It's just the GM trying to dupe himself with a spy that he invented to trick his party, who is not actually making any proactive decisions. It feels just blatantly unfair. I mean, you're just railroading the party to take a spy into their ranks, and then, you know, you're gonna reveal and be like, he was a spy the whole time! And the party's like, oh my gosh, Wallace! Why didn't you ask or do a background check? And it, you know, it's all Wallace's fault. So at the time, I thought to myself, wow, that sucks. And we played with them for a while and we did our best. And then we said, this group sucks. And we quit and we went back to our normal games. And, you know, they continued to play Where's Wallace. Fast forward about 5-6 years, I don't know anymore. And I was that GM. I was playing with a group, and every time something happened, they would say, I don't know what to do. What do the NPCs say? And I would have to invent a Wallace character to show up and say, well, why don't you go over there? And then they would go over there, and then they would stop again, and they'd say, well, what does Wallace want to do next? And I was doing the same thing. I was retreading those same steps. I would introduce Wallace, and then I would try to make Wallace leave because I wanted the party to be their own, like, thing. I didn't want to play Wallace Says. I just wanted them to play on their own and have their own ideas. But eventually, what occurred to me is that the problem is not that Wallace exists. The problem is that the party has no leader. And they keep asking Wallace what to do because they have no leadership. And, as the strongest personality in the group, the GM is also now the group leader, and so your DMPC winds up being the party leader. This does, unfortunately, cut off tons of options to you as the GM. I mean, there's so many things you cannot do when the party is relying on you to be the party leader, and you're also their chief adversary, because every twist you think of, you already know about, which means that Wallace, if they lead them down a bad path, it really is Wallace's fault, and it's also your fault because you created the problem that Wallace led them all down, and it's all kind of cheap and unfair feeling. So what you wind up doing is you kind of go the dungeon route, and you just hash out a bunch of dungeons, and then that way Wallace isn't really making any critical decisions, the party is just killing things, and a lot of times, like, they're happy with that. You'll find that a lot of role players are just, they're happy with that. They're like, yeah, that's good. That's good. I feel strong. I feel powerful. I'm enjoying the power fantasy, and that's good. But I personally do not have fun GMing like that. I mean, it gets boring. You're just getting, like, monsters, and you just put them in a room, and the party walks in, and they throw dice at it, and it dies. And, like, you're all powerful. You could make a monster that would kill the party, but then the game would be over, and that's not really the point. You're sort of like, I don't know, like a roguelike random monster generator. Like, yeah, they can also yell at you, and sometimes that makes them feel like they're role-playing because they're yelling at the NPCs or whatever. But nothing they do really matters because they aren't in control of anything. They let Wallace choose everything. So there's two ways, I think, that a lot of GMs grapple with this. One is that you make really elaborate dungeons with all kinds of crazy traps. And the other is you create lots of interesting or weird vignettes. So the party will walk into a room and there'll be like a little scene going on. And you as the GM kind of tell a funny little story, or, you know, you make the players play at a game show and that's kind of cool. And maybe the players go along, or maybe they whip out the end fun spell and they just like stop all fun from happening outright. That actually happens a lot. It's really frustrating in D&D because you always forget about the end fun spell. It like every class has it. I don't know why. You say, hey guys, here's a genie, and the genie wants you to open a door. What's behind the door? It's a mystery. I cast banish. Okay, and the genie vanishes. That's okay, fun over. Yeah guys, high five. Did you see me? I own that genie. I can't believe the GM forgot the banish spell. Oh my god, it's so depressing. But okay, I've got a third option, and it's addressing the core psychological issue. I once ran a game called Torg's Guys, and the premise was that the biggest man is in charge of the game. It was kind of a road warrior thing, like a post-apocalyptic setting, and every single morning, Torg would wake up, and he had this unquenchable fury. And he would ask himself, why am I so angry? And he would go to the party members, and he would propose that they just attack the next gang over the hill. Torg's logic was that obviously he was mad because another gang might be greater than his gang. And the thing that was fun about Torg was that he was always most angry at himself. So at the start of the game, there was Big Jim, and he was the leader of the gang, but Big Jim had just died. So Torg goes to the party and he goes, "Everyone, I know that our gang says the biggest man should be in charge. And I am the tallest and the beefiest. But I understand I am not the biggest man. I am frequently frustrated with my own shortcomings. If anyone else would like to lead, I will stand behind you." And of course, this group being who they were, no one wanted to lead, so Torg was in charge. I knew it wasn't going to be any other way. So Torg just was, like, as dumb as a toddler. He had no good ideas, but he would just get up there, and he would walk the party through his reasoning as to why are we going to attack these people, which was usually for no good reason, and how are we going to attack them, which was usually, we're just going to walk up and start a fight. And if the party had any problems with it, they could speak up, which they rarely did unless Torg, like, expressly pointed out he was concerned about something, which I made an effort to do. I would be like, "Yeah, I really want to kill them, but I'm concerned it will be difficult because they can turn invisible. They have secret technology. But I am willing to walk directly into the woods and fight them in pitch combat if you'll all join me." And that type of thing would often make the party try to come up with ideas to solve the invisibility issue. Because at this point, Torg was a leader, but he was too dumb to actually come up with good plans. And ultimately, though, whatever happened, Torg was always accepting responsibility. If something went badly, Torg would be angry at himself. He would say, "I'm so sorry, I did not have a better idea." When players gave him ideas, he would say, "Thank you for having that thought for me. This is why we are a team. You are truly valuable to me." And even in combat, Torg kinda sucked. The man had the strength of a grizzly bear. It was truly terrifying when he actually hit someone. But he was really more of a fortress than a fighter. Like, he was very hard to kill, but the party was frequently astounded by how easily Torg was disabled. Anything that couldn't be solved by sheer brute strength was impassable for him, and so he really, really needed the party. And he was always really nice to them about it, and really thankful for having them, and angry at himself that he wasn't more capable. And with this group, I don't think that I ever played a game where they were more interactive. Like, it worked. Because they wanted to help Torg. Torg gave them a direction, an objective. He would comment about things he was concerned about, which was practically everything because he was too stupid to understand anything that was going on. And the party tried their best to, like, make things work for Torg because he was so good to them, they liked him. So I realized the secret there with that particular group was to have a DMPC with leadership-style personality, but basically no capabilities. And I think that that formula could work in a lot of different game genres. Like, for example, if you wanted to do political intrigue, you might try introducing an NPC who is like a spy master, and he really likes the party, and he's like, "Wow, you guys are certainly awfully smart," but then it turns out this spy master is a complete bumbling idiot, and he can't do anything on his own without the party's help, and every time the party helps him, he is super thankful, and he, like, tries to find great rewards for them and make them feel really valuable, so they all like him, and they want to keep helping him out. Now, granted, this group, they were not, like, asshats, right? They were good guys. They weren't idiots. They weren't mean. They were nice people who wanted to help and save the world. They wanted to be heroes. They got decision paralysis constantly, and they were very risk-averse, but they were not, like, out to just only help themselves or to be malicious or to feel powerful. They wanted to do the right thing, and so that's why Torg worked, because it spoke to kind of their inner desire to help Torg. I know other players where if you introduce Torg, they would just immediately roll insight and then say, "I am smarter than Torg," even though in real life they might really not be that much smarter than Torg. But, you know, that's part of why they behave that way, and then they just make trouble and they power trip on all the NPCs. So the DMPC wouldn't work for those guys, but it does work for those players who are just scared to make choices and need someone to step up and be a leader for the group. Torg takes the heat off. Anytime the players make a mistake, Torg says, "That was my fault. I wish I could have been a better leader." And it makes them feel more comfortable with making choices because they know that someone else is going to just accept that fall and carry the group and still be like, "I'm glad you're here." Now, ultimately, I mean, they still weren't as good as, like, really good narrative players or a player group that had their own player leader. And I find that what you really have to do is you have to curate players who want to play that way and who can play that way. And you do have to weed out people who are going to be asshats to some extent. Like, people with decision paralysis are okay. Like, if they're not malicious, it's okay. If you have one of those people in the group, usually they're cool to go along with whatever everybody else is doing, just so long as it feels like they're doing the right thing and they're not making mistakes. But, like a power-tripping asshat who doesn't really connect to any part of the game and is just steamrolling over NPCs without trying to understand why the NPCs are, they tend to prevent the game from really manifesting properly. And that is a different and even more challenging can of worms. But yeah, the other piece of really useless internet advice I see a lot is, if you don't like how your group is playing, find a different group. No games is better than bad games. Like, that's really useless advice because these are typically friends that you're playing with, and I mean, yeah, you could like stop playing with them, but then you won't be seeing them on the weekends or whatever as much because they'll keep playing, but you won't be there. Okay, there's social stuff in it. It's not as simple as just like treating your friends like disposable objects. There is a touch of bridge burning going on when you decide to leave a group and then maybe find another one. Unfortunately, that's just how it is. I didn't give up on that risk-averse group for like a couple of years, and when I finally did, it was because I realized that it was getting worse and not better. Moving on to a new group was the only way that I was going to get what I wanted, and even then, it still took a while for me to find players for the new group that could do the kind of games that I wanted to do, because the kind of games that I want to do require the skill set that I'm looking for. It was like a... I had to have a pool of players to choose from. So if you don't have the luxury to just walk away from your group, this is one option that you, the forever DM, can try, is the bumbling idiot leader DMPC. Maybe it'll fix a lot of problems, though of course not all of them. Or maybe not. But it's worth a try.